All right, it's time now to make a visit to the State House with Massachusetts State Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr. And Senator Tarr, welcome back. We're in the middle of the summer. How are you?
Well, thanks, Rick. Yeah, it's a beautiful day here on Cape Ann. I'm doing great. I hope you're doing well also.
Absolutely. It is a beautiful day. We've had a lot of days that feel like, you know, late September, early October, but my wife says that we'll say, I want the humidity and the – when your deodorant fails you by 8 o'clock in the morning, that's a good summer day.
Oh, my gosh, Rick. I'm not a fan of humidity, and I think you're definitely in the minority on that one.
Well, okay. Oh, man. I keep hoping. All right. Anyway, you know, let's get down to business here. Speaking of business, a lot of business going on at the State House, a very, very busy time of year for you.
It definitely is, Rick. You know, you mentioned that it's the middle of the summer, and a lot of folks are thinking about vacation plans and being at the beach and playing golf and doing all the wonderful things that we enjoy in life. But for the legislature, this is the busiest of times, second probably only to the weeks when we deal with the state budget. We are now in essentially the red zone of the legislative session, meaning that at the end of July 31st, when it comes, that is the end of the formal legislative session for the Massachusetts legislature for this year. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't still meet, because we'll meet an informal session, as the Constitution demands us to do. We'll meet twice a week because we're required to meet every 72 hours. But for matters that are subject to controversy, that require a roll call vote, that will be debated, those need to be done in the formal session. And we are definitely seeing the close of that session approaching quickly. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, Rick, that's important to think about, and you and I have discussed this a little bit in the past, is that when the House and the Senate pass two different versions of essentially the same bill, the mechanism to reconcile those two is to do what's called a conference committee, which is three members of the Senate and three members of the House that get together to be able to do that work of reconciling the two versions of the bill. And right now, there are approximately 11 conference committees meeting mm-hmm. on Beacon Hill. And that should tell you that as we enter the last 2 weeks of the session, that it could be a very frenetic environment as conference committees report and we try to take up those reports and consider what to do with them. So it's a very busy time. And just to give you a sense of some of those conference committees and their subjects, one is meeting on sports betting. Another one is meeting on protections for our open space in Massachusetts. Another one is meeting on a climate bill, a climate change bill. I actually happen to be serving on that one. But there are a whole host of these conference committees that are meeting, and if they start to report, it's going to be an even busier time on Beacon Hill.
Well, this is your time of year. I mean, you know, you don't like to sleep anyway, and so that works out very well for you.
And I also like to be in air-conditioned space because I'm not a fan of the heat.
All right, and listen, as an aside, how many committees do you serve on, Senator? Do they change during the year, or are they pretty much standing? You're on the same committees all the time.
Well, I'm pretty much on the same committees all the time, and I have to recall the count, but I believe I'm currently serving on 9 or 10. But I also appoint the minority members to the committees, and so once in a while we may have a change where we switch someone from one committee to another, or something of that nature, but generally the committees stay the same for the entire 2 years of the legislative session.
Without getting too political, it sounds like you could use some help on your side of the fence.
Well, it's definitely hard with three members, Rick, to be able to cover not only all of the committees that we have to cover, mm-hmm. and right now, as I mentioned, we've appointed conference committees, so those 11 conference committees are on top of everybody's committee assignments, and in the Republican caucus, most of us have anywhere between 9 and 11 committees, which is a lot to begin with. And then you layer on top the conference committees, and then you add to that special commissions and special committees, which don't last for the entire session, but they are pointed toward a particular subject or a particular task. When you put all that together, it's very hard to do it with only three members.
Oh, my goodness. I can only imagine. Senator, I want to turn to a very serious topic. There is, of course, a national news story on reproductive rights. A 10-year-old in Indiana, I believe, is making all kinds of headlines. And maybe you could bring us up to speed on what Massachusetts is doing about this kind of thing.
Well, absolutely, Rick. And I think it's important to start that part of the conversation by acknowledging that in Massachusetts, pursuant to our Constitution and our statutes, the right of access to abortion is protected. And so that has been something that's been true for a while. And so the decision that overturned Roe versus Wade in that respect didn't really affect Massachusetts. However, the concern that's arisen is that other states, which either are in the process of enacting very restrictive laws relative to abortion or had so-called trigger laws that went into effect based on the results of the Supreme Court decision, in those states, there are some provisions in some of the laws which create sort of a bounty hunter situation where somebody could attempt, in theory, to bring an action against someone in Massachusetts that provides access to abortion or to a patient that receives an abortion. And so in order to guard against that and in order to protect our laws against the potentially predatory laws of other states, this week on Wednesday we passed a law that did a series of things, but most importantly, it insulated providers in Massachusetts and patients in Massachusetts from something that might occur as a result of the laws of another state. And you might think that that isn't something that's necessary. You might think that would never happen, but we can't afford to take that chance. And so this liability shield for both criminal and civil actions is something that was passed by the Senate this week. It was passed by the House recently. And those two bills are different. They have a similar purpose, but they have different provisions. So they, too, will be subject to a conference committee. And, in fact, I appointed myself to that conference committee yesterday, and we expect to start a meeting soon. And another important part of this, Rick, is the bill, which largely mirrors an executive order that was signed by Governor Baker very close in time to the passage of the Supreme Court case that overturned Roe versus Wade, makes it much harder for Massachusetts to extradite someone to another state who's seeking to bring them within their jurisdiction for doing something that under the laws of the Commonwealth is perfectly legal. So there are careful boundaries around that. But as far as I'm concerned, this is as much about protecting our laws from attack by another state as it is anything else.
And, Senator, is this a bipartisan effort that's pretty overwhelmingly on the same side?
It very much is. In the Senate on Wednesday, the vote was absolutely unanimous. It was a recorded roll call vote, and the vote was 40-0.
Okay. All right. Wow. Just very, very difficult times for so many. All right. Finally, Senator, on the good news side of things, there was a story in the Salem News today about a transportation bond bill, I believe, that's going to benefit infrastructure in the area.
Whether they be state infrastructure or transportation or other things that involve projects that have a useful life of more than 5 years, we from time to time do a bond bill. And the bond bill allows the administration to borrow for certain things subject to the provisions and the constraints that we put into the authorization. And this week, actually yesterday, we passed the transportation bond bill, again by unanimous vote, that authorizes over $10.38 billion in bonding. Now, it's important to remember that this is not a spending bill. This authorizes the administration to borrow that amount, but it's also subject to the requirements in Massachusetts that impose a cap on borrowing. So we have a cap, and it varies from year to year, but the idea is to make sure that our total borrowing is within control and doesn't exceed what we can afford to pay in debt service. So generally, the authorizations in a bond bill last for about 10 years, and these authorizations will last probably for at least that long. And they will fund, depending on how the administration chooses to proceed, things for highway paving and bridge projects and municipal roadway construction and the Complete Streets Program and our regional transit authority. So pretty much everything under the sun, Rick, that has to do with transportation that is not an operating expense, but rather is a capital expense that we would borrow money for, because if it's a short-term expense, if it's an operating expense item, we don't want to borrow for that and pay the debt service. So let me give you a feel for some of the things that we actually inserted in into the bill that affect the Cape Ann community. One is the issue of sidewalks. We've heard repeatedly from the Cape Ann communities that there's a need for additional sidewalks. It's very hard for them to afford sidewalks with the resources they have. So in this bill for the four Cape Ann communities, there's $3 million to help Rockport, Essex, Gloucester, and Manchester for the cost of sidewalks. Another issue that's been with us for a while, and you and I have talked about this a little bit in the past, is the issue of noise that occurs at the Rockport train station from trains having to lay over overnight. And if it's the wintertime, they often have to run overnight, which creates obviously noise issues for the neighborhood surrounding the train station. And a while back, I made a visit along with Ted Costa from my staff and town administrator Mitch Vieira and then member of the Board of Selectmen Don Campbell to look at a potential solution to that problem in Brunswick, Maine. And that solution is to enclose the train in a very basic building so that it's insulated from emitting sound to the outside environment. So we were able to put $2 million in authorization in the bond bill to look at the planning, design, and construction of such a building. And then last, Rick, but certainly not least, we're all sensitive to the issues of climate change and how we need to do things to be more resilient with regard to those changes. And Essex is trying to look ahead. And the town, through its town administrator, Brendan Zubricki, who is just phenomenal, is looking to maybe reconfigure one end of Apple Street, which could be subject to flooding if we have certain conditions that we hope won't take place but could take place. So we put $250,000 in the bond bill of authorization to assist Essex with that project. And, Rick, a much larger regional project that I think is so significant and so important is that a coalition of legislators, and I was proud to be in that coalition, worked together to create a $28 million authorization to look at trying to do a pilot program to create intra-coastal passenger ferry service. And this would involve, at the very least, the communities of Lynn, Salem, Gloucester, Quincy, and a couple of different locations in Boston and Winthrop. And so this is something that we've talked about for a long time, and there's been various attempts at intracoastal ferries over the years. This is a comprehensive plan to be able to move forward and look at creating this infrastructure, look at acquiring the necessary vessels, and determining if in the long term this could be a viable mode of transportation, which would take cars off the road, create a better experience for tourists, perhaps, than being stuck in traffic, and certainly make use of an underutilized resource, which is the waterways of the Commonwealth, particularly along the coast north of Boston.
Taking care of your constituents and taking care of the state. That's my Senator Bruce Tarr, my student. I love it. Finally, Senator, you know, I got to ask you, what happens after July 31? Do you fall off the cliff? I mean, what happens?
We absolutely do not. But after July 31st, we do not entertain matters that would require a roll call vote. And that's important, Rick, because when we go into informal session, mm-hmm. there's a requirement that there be one member of each party always on the floor. There may not be a lot of legislators, but there's always at least two.
Mm-hmm.
And if any one person chooses to stop that session because they feel what's about to be considered is inappropriate, it stops. So it's a situation where you have to work together. You have to find agreement. And we do pass bills in that environment. And in fact, in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, because we could not gather in our chamber and we had not yet passed a set of rules that allowed us to participate remotely, the only thing we could do is operate in informal session. And I'm very proud of the way that in those days we worked together and we moved critical legislation. But again, there were no roll call votes. There was some debate, but there were no roll call votes. And that's an important difference.
That's Massachusetts State Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.